The 4th anniversary special of the Webcomic Beacon podcast is coming up this December, and there is a giveaway. That's right, several people have sent in their print versions of their comics to be given away for this special occasion, such as Bittersweet Candy Bowl, Theater Hopper, Demon Graphics, Doc Rat, and also Zombie Ranch. You can enter to win any one of these prizes by going to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway for further information, such as sending in a voicemail, drawing us some Becky art, or signing up for our link referral program. And this is open to everybody, except for me. I don't count. But you count. Go to webcastbeacon.com/giveaway and get in on the 4th anniversary special for the Webcomic Beacon podcast.
News and commentary on the Webcomic Beacon newscast.
Welcome one and all to the Webcomic Beacon newscast. This is episode number 43. Or 44 or 45. I don't know. Thess will fix it in post if we need him to. That's not true. He'll leave this all in. And this. Hi, I'm Ross Scott. I'm our host for the day. Here on the show, we will be talking about the latest in webcomic news and opinions and what have you. With me this week, as always, is the amazing Alex of Alex's Guide. Alex Heberling, how the hell are you?
I'm awesome. I had cookies for breakfast.
Like an adult. I like
I'm
it.
I'm an adult.
Yeah. Also joining us for the week, a comic artist and... do you actually run the 910 community?
Actually, comic writer. I can't even draw a straight line without a ruler. And yes, I am the...
Writing is an art form. That's my excuse.
And I am the founder and, the guy in charge and who runs the whole rigmarole over at 910CMX, 910comics.com.
There you go, 910CMX.com, our own Tom Revor. Thank you for joining us on the show.
Thank you.
This week we'll be talking about a bunch of news articles and giving you three cranky old men's opinions on them. Well, two cranky old men, one cranky old woman.
Your kids these days.
And they're damn comics.
Get off my lawn.
Exactly. So
my day, we coded it by hand.
Back in my day, we didn't even have comics. We just had pictures. You just shout things at them. We liked it. Just fine.
We read them uphill both ways in the snow.
Yeah, we read comics uphill. I don't know how that works. The comics were actually on the hill. So we've got a lot of news to cover this week, so we're just going to jump right in after my two-man introduction. So first up, there's been a lot of news this week about two bills that are going through Congress at the moment. The SOPA, the Stop Online Piracy Act, as well as the Protect IP Act that are both in Congress right now. A lot of large sites such as 4chan, Boing Boing, Tumblr, Mozilla as well have been trying to raise attention about them and try and rally the art, the audience, their audiences, American audiences especially, against them. But first, let's take a minute and make sure we're all on the same page here. Did you guys read up a little bit on the SOPA and PIPA, as they're known?
Certainly did, until my eyes bled.
Yeah, they're a little long-winded.
Well, show me a politician that isn't.
Fair enough. So, Tom, since your eyes are still recovering from bleeding, maybe you could give like a quick description of SOPA.
Well, SOPA, really. The primary thing behind it is aimed specifically at non-American websites that are either A, going through and dedicated to stealing of U.S. intellectual properties, movies, music, comics, whatever, or B, those that are endangering the public health, terrorist sites for one, which is the far extreme, but others to those who sell unlicensed prescriptions.
Mm-hmm. All right. And what they're trying to do is basically stop you from being able to access said sites. Now, where this becomes obviously tricky is, how do they know what qualifies as a site that's doing this? Obviously, there's a lot of gray area, and one area that's talked about by the people detracting from these bills is that one link on YouTube does not make YouTube a torrenting site or a piracy site, though obviously in the eyes of the law, it very easily could be seen that way, and the laws are written in such a way where one or a few links by users on a social networking site could theoretically take down the entire site, which is where it gets really tricky really, really fast. Now, I know I saw a lot of kind of large sites. Are you guys aware of any kind of comic backlash to these bills?
In webcomics themselves or even print comics, I have not really seen anything except from the corporations that own them, for example, Warner Brothers with DC and Disney now with Marvel, and they are for it, but primarily not because of comics, but because of their other intellectual properties, the movies and music.
Sure. Now, again, there's a lot of issues with these bills. I mean, it's easy to say, grr, they're evil, boo Congress, but truth is, I mean, they're trying to get some ideas that aren't necessarily terrible, but that doesn't mean that this is the solution to those problems. I mean, we talk every week on this show about piracy, and basically this is a bunch of corporations trying to get bills in place to stop piracy. Now, I think we could debate this all day, but we've got a lot of other news to cover. But if you want to read up on these things, and I think you should if you go on the web ever, you can check out AmericanCensorship.org, CyberCrimesUnit.com. In fact, just go to the Webcomic Beacon newscast post for this post that you're listening to right here, and you can find out all you need to know. We'll be linking to all the stories that we read up on it. It's a complex issue, and it deserves your attention, and you should write to your congressman however it is that you feel about it, though... Here on the Webcomic Beacon newscast, we are afraid of generally just about anything happening to our precious little internet. So please, please don't mess with it, Congress. Thank you. All right. With that, we move on to a quick article on the Washington Post Comic Rift site. Every year, they run a completely popularity contest-based poll known as the Best of Webcomics. What qualifies for best of web comics is completely subjective in every way, shape, and form. But you can weigh in over at the Washington Post website and tell them what you think the best comics are. Current front runners are, of course, some of the more popular ones. XKCD, Pigmorn, Hark a Vagrant, The Oatmeal, Girl Genius, Penny Arcade, PvP, The Trenches. No real outliers in any of that, though. As we discussed last year, that last year won out and surprised us all because none of us had ever heard of it. That sound about right to you, Alex?
I also remember a comic I think called like Jesus and Mohammed or something.
Yes,
like
Jesus
that.
And Mo. That's right.
In
they won out last year.
A similar
year.
Story to this.
By the way, looking through the thread, I already recognized three different comic book artists suggesting their own comics. Hey, I'm not going to lie. I was thinking about it. So, hey, what are you going to do? But anyway, go on over to that site. You can follow the link from our site and weigh in on comics. They're currently in the submission phase. So they're still taking new comics to be submitted, and then there's going to be some sort of poll or something. All right, and with that, we move on to the next article. Two articles, actually, back-to-back, jointly together.
United as one.
United as one. Unfortunately, divided could not be more so. Frank Miller, creator of Sin City and such, dirty old man that he is, has been railing on his website against the Occupy movement, which garnered him a lot of bad publicity in the eyes of a lot of his fans, who have taken to his website to basically eviscerate him. For both his beliefs and then also some of his comics. They basically used it, turned into a complete hating free-for-all of hating. Now that in itself, plenty, not so much comic related, but here's where it gets interesting. Then we have a response to the entire situation from Mark Miller, creator of Kick-Ass and other titles of recent years, who pretty much comes out and says, you know, someone can believe politically whatever they want. I can still like their stuff. And to hate someone just for their beliefs kind of goes against the point since, you know, it is America.
And just add in on that, politically, Miller comes off as someone on the right, whereas Mark Miller is a self-described left-winger.
Exactly. And he says in his last paragraph, I don't know, I just hate a mob. I think it demeans us. I also hate a bandwagon and would urge my fellow left-wing readers to boycott Miller no less than H.P. Lovecraft, Steve Ditko, David Mamet, and any other writer who might not share my personal philosophy, but whose work I'm happy to have on my shelves, end quote. So, you know, definitely a different perspective on the same issue than a lot of people are taking. So, the Occupy movement aside, which not so much comic related, though obviously a big issue right now, let's look at it from this angle. Is it okay to like the work but not the author? Do you have to believe in someone's political beliefs to like their work?
Let me start off by saying I'm someone, politically speaking, I come off on the conservative side. And I refuse to go to a George Clooney movie or some of these others simply because I know that if I go to their movies, it helps fund them. And why am I going to give my money to something that I politically disagree with so vehemently?
Right.
Although I do like their work. But it's also – I look at some of the comments that are coming in off of Miller's page, and it isn't a – I disagree with you for what you're saying because of A, B, and C, and giving a logical explanation. It is strawman arguments, it's insults, it's a lot of the stuff that you usually see coming off from people politically on the left. Not a basis for an argument, but rather an insult and degradation of the person itself because they don't agree with them.
Well, that sounds like the internet for you.
Yeah.
Alex, what do you think? Do you think you have to like the artist to like his work?
Well, no. I think that it's kind of important sometimes to divorce the artist's work from the artists themselves.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you can certainly not agree with someone ideologically, but still enjoy their comics. I will admit, though, that, you know, if it depends on what the exact politics of the person are. If somebody is going to just make a comic entirely of fat jokes after I've enjoyed their work for years, then yeah, that's going to kind of sully my enjoyment of the rest of their work.
Mm.
Even if I'd been a fan of them for a long time.
I'll admit I've definitely stopped reading some comics because I've met the creators and decided he's a complete dick.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, that's most of
and
them.
And I mean, you know.
Yeah, well, but I stopped reading a lot of comics. What can
work itself? I mean, I've stopped reading a number of books because of politics, but not so much because of the person per se, but how much it influences the work they are creating, especially on the writer's side,
exactly.
Where there have been a lot of them that have put in their own political leanings with the attitude of, if you don't agree with me, you're a freaking idiot. Now, granted, Miller is doing the same thing from the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, well, I mean,
but it still is.
There's some comics. Okay, well, let's take the case of Frank Miller for a minute. So Frank Miller very much puts his political beliefs into his comics. I mean, it is hard to argue that The Dark Knight Returns is not about very much his own beliefs and hatred of certain things and love of other things. I mean, that's just how it's written. But
yeah, it was written. I mean, people have to take in consideration the time that it was written in.
Sure.
Just like Watchmen. I mean, it was late 80s, and it was very paranoid of the time of the current administrations.
Sure. But what about a case like, does it matter what Bill Keen, creator of Family Circus,
God rest his soul.
God rest his soul. Does it matter if he was in favor of guns or against them to like, let's say you believe in that topic, to like Family Circus, you know, something that's completely devoid of the content?
The work that he was, well, using the Keen example, and I'm not saying anything about him, I don't know him one way or the other, what his views are, which to me says something about
him. I assume he has an armed bunker, but that's just a theory.
But I mean, he didn't allow the only things that he allowed to influence his work was his belief in family, and he was using that to write the comic. It was examples from his own life expounded out for a good comic.
Yeah.
It's not like someone who writes a story saying that, you know, someone who believes in truth, justice, and the American way decides to eliminate that last part from his motto.
Well, you know, Alex, you believe in dragons and magic and ponies, and I've never let that stop me from reading your comic. I'm just going to say it. Anyway,
that's big of you, Ross.
Thank you. I felt like that was an important thing to mention.
I think it can kind of be summed up by some of the discussion that I saw in my local cartoonist mailing list this week.
Uh-huh.
You can like someone's work, and then you find out that they're awesome, and that can just be icing on the cake.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'd just like to mention that all of us here on the Webcomic Beacon are super nice guys. And girls.
So don't let it get out. It'll ruin my reputation.
So you should read all of our stuff and love it and love us for it. All right. With that, we'll move on to the next article. But we'd love to hear your thoughts and encourage you to go over to our website, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com, and leave comments on the thread. We would love to hear from you. You can even call into our news line at 1-320-310-0922. And leave us a voicemail about anything you want, including this right here. And hey, if it's any good, probably play it on the show. What can we say? We're suckers for content that we don't have to do. Next up, we've already mentioned the Occupy protest. There is an Occupy Comics Kickstarter going currently with a lot of supporters. They're trying to raise $10,000 for the publishing. And they're almost there. They have 220 backers and 19 days to go, so it's a good bet that they're going to make it at this point. There's a lot of big names involved. I definitely noticed a different Mark Miller than the one we were talking about previously. Steve Niles, Molly Crabapple, and a bunch of others. And I got to say, what I didn't think the Occupy movement was going to spawn comics, but there you have it.
I'm completely not surprised by it.
Yeah, me neither.
Well,
think about it. First of all, you've got comics are a great medium, especially to reach people of all ages, especially the younger ones. It is a visual media so that a lot of people can see it and learn from it. What gets me, though, is they set $10,000 goal.
Yeah.
According to their website, they've currently raised $9,672.
Yep.
Out of 220 backers. Now, 220 backers is a drop in the bucket, and that's about $44 each.
Sure.
More than likely, I would say that maybe 200 of them have a dollar or $5, and there are just a few who have donated a lot more.
Well, they give a breakdown, actually, on the side of the page, and they've got 21 backers at the $150 or more level. And you can see, kind of going down, that you've got a lot in the $50 range as well, the $20 range. The $1 range, actually only 5 backers. You get a lot more in the $10 to $50 sweet spot. So, go figure. Speaking of Kickstarters, though, we'll go right into the next piece of news. We talked in the past about the Womanology comics anthology. Well, previews have started to arise from it, and they've got them in a nice slideshow, actually, over on womanthology.blogspot.com. And you can follow the link from our site or just go on over there. It's really coming together nicely, and I definitely saw some cool stuff in there. I especially liked all the posts that go below the comics that mention a little bit of history and some pro tips and some profiles about who these people are behind the comics. It seems like a great use of the format. Alex, what'd you think?
It looks really awesome.
Yeah, pretty. Tom?
Well, I think it definitely looks interesting. I do like the little bits of the history of some of the people behind some of the women behind it.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going to comment on the artistic styles of some of them or the writings, because I don't have enough of a sampling for it.
Right.
But it is nice to see that there are more women in comics than just Gail Simone and Trina Robbins.
Yeah, there's definitely they're definitely showing a lot of variety. By the way, pretty good comic reader. I mean, a little hard to zoom in on some of this stuff. I mean, I know it's just kind of a preview thing, but it's pretty easy to zoom through all that. You can even scroll through it. I mean, pretty well done. I don't know what plugin that is, but I like it.
It's like some version of Lightbox.
Yeah, sweet. Go Lightbox. Alrighty. Well, check them out over at Womanthology, and we'll move right along. So, next up is an author you probably haven't heard much about. There's a children's author named Jeff Kinney, a name you probably aren't that familiar with. But Jeff Kinney, it turns out, is the author behind Diary of a Wimpy Kid, the hugely successful book and now movie franchise. There's an article with him over at the Richmond Times-Dispatch, which I'm sure you all subscribe to, just like we do. By the way, thanks to our own Eric, who's making everything run behind the scenes and finding all of our articles every week. He has a subscription to the Richmond Times-Dispatch that he reads vehemently daily, obviously. Anyway, Jeff Kinney is best known for his work Diary of a Wimpy Kid, and the only reason we bothered to mention all of this is because he actually tried to get his start in print comics and found zero success and then switched to writing books as an alternative. Nice to see – I got to say, reading this article, nice to see that, you know, someone who's doing something so artistic and was completely shut down find another outlet that wound up being very successful. So,
and didn't he put the first part of Diary up online?
Yes, he did.
At some point?
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember talking about that in the past.
Yeah, that sounds like a thing we said. Awesome. All right, and let's see.
Jeff Kinney.
Yeah, go Jeff. It's a nice Sunday. By the way, how are we doing in the chat room, Alex? I don't actually have it open right now.
Well, we had one guest, but then they wandered away.
No. Yes, that's right. We're recording live in the chat room every Sunday morning at 10:30 a.m. Eastern. What a great way to start your day than listening to us yammer on about comics while the coffee brews. So be sure to tune in next time you're sitting around
in the chat room. Then we give you a little shout out halfway through the show.
Yeah, we totally do. If there's anyone there to shout to.
That guy just left. Is missing out.
Jerk.
I don't remember what his username was.
That's a jerk. Anyone that leaves it. There. Anyway.
Jerk.
Yeah. Speaking of movies, Platinum Studios is a company we talked about in the past. They're the IP house behind Cowboys and Aliens. Their pretty much goal in life is to take comic ideas and turn them into books and movies and crap. They have had mixed success, mostly large failures, and are trying very desperately to have a last-minute plea to raise any money to stay afloat. They tried to sell off all of their shares, only to find out that their shares are now completely useless. Which, that's...
Because you should be able to buy them real cheap.
Yeah, they're so...
You can use them for toilet paper.
You sure could, and that might be a better use of them. Their stock has lost over 86% of its value in the last year. But good news, because Atlantis Rising is a new comic book series that is relaunching, and they're hoping to do a lot of crap outside of comics with it.
Yeah.
And for those who don't remember, Platinum Studios is also the people behind, who were temporarily behind Drunk Duck. They bought Drunk Duck out for a while and then sold it off. They also bought WowieO, the publishing house.
Yeah.
And they had to sell that off. Both of which, as well as Platinum, have always had financial problems.
They seem like they've had some management issues, just a little. Somehow, I'm getting that sense. I'm not sure why, but definitely getting the sense something's up over there. But we will follow the story as it develops and as they slowly burn to the ground. And with that, we'll move on to our next article, one over at Comic Book Resources, all about is digital the ultimate future for comics? Now, this was a really interesting article, especially if you've ever wondered what it's like to own a comic book shop, because they basically this gentleman, Brian Hibbs, gives a slow blow-by-blow breakdown of what it's like to have the new Marvel and DC books in his shop and what it's like to try and package them with these value-added digital codes and what he's seen with the process. I gotta say, I never thought that much about what happens when you try and have a digital code, but he really goes into the details about giving it away in the book, and do you then put a bag on the book, and do you put a card with it, and a lot of interesting stuff that I got, just details that I had never put in thought at all about in the world of trying to sell print comics. Definitely some highlights there. What do you guys think? Were there any takeaways for you guys?
Well, to me, the bundling of digital comics with print comics always seemed to be like asking the comic shop owners to slit their own throat.
Yeah, well, there's an element of that.
Most comic shops are small owned, local owned, one shop by a couple of people.
That's
and
true.
They've always been on the edge of barely staying in business. So and by adding in something like the digital comic inclusion where people see, oh, I can just get this online and it's a lot easier,
yeah,
going to reduce down the business as well. I mean, it really is. It's a lot of it's the transition from the print to the electronic medium, and we're going to see the loss of a major fundamental thing by the loss of print.
It's true, but I mean, right now, digital is still clearly trying to find its footing from these larger publishers. They're definitely still trying to figure out the best way to do it. But it's nice to see kind of a very practical, like, dissection going into exactly how to do it in terms of PDF and Comixology and all these different, slightly different formats and how they would all be affected by it. I mean, they are shooting themselves in the foot. I just don't think anyone that's buying the print comic cares about the digital comic.
I think that, to me, a lot of it is it's going to be a niche market no matter what. But there are going to be people who transfer over to the digital from the print.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, coming from the old guy perspective, where I mean, I used to wait by the mailbox for my subscription of Batman to come in. There's as much as I love webcomics, there's still something about having a comic book come in the mail or pick one up at the store and having that paper, tangible item in your hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, there is definitely something to be said for the tangible item in your hands. This is actually in parallel to another article from this week by Scott Bachman over at Comic Hero News, basically discussing the issues with the digital format and how it hasn't quite found its stride yet, really. But how the Comixology as an app in particular, in his mind, is really the only thing that's really trying to get it right now. Sure, you can read comics on digitally with a lot of other possible ways, but this is in his argument, this is the only one so far that's really doing anything worth a damn. Now, let me ask: do you guys read any comics via any media other than web comics on a computer, full screen or something?
No.
No. Alex?
Nope.
Yeah, you don't strike me as an iPad owner, Alex. But yeah, I mean, maybe we're just not the target market, so we're not the best people to be discussing this. Okay, smartphones, either of you? Yes?
Absolutely.
Ever read?
Nope, too poor.
Tom, do you ever read any comics on a smartphone?
Other than webcomics, no.
All right, well, were the webcomics at least, did they have a mobile version or an app or anything like that?
Nope.
All right.
Nope. No, I mean, let me take that back. I do have the app from Bill Holbrook's Kevin at Kell, which is a well-done app for it. It has a lot of added features in there rather than just giving the current comic or the past few comics. It does have some other stuff in there. It's easier for me just to go to the website and read it.
Sure. All right, well, the debate definitely continues. So head on over to our website, again, newscast.webcomicbeacon.com, and you can find out all about it and more. All right, we need to take a quick break and give a chance for our sponsors to try and tell you all about something that we think is totally awesome, clearly, based on the fact that I don't know what it is yet. But stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this exciting message.
Like animation? Come listen to Animation Aficionados.
And if you disagree with us, you could be a guest on a future show.
Available on iTunes, the Zune Market, and animationaficionados.com.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. Webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
All right, well, welcome back to the Webcomic Beacon Newscast. Hope you didn't go far. Tom, you were saying over the break that you have some strong beliefs on the SOPA bill.
Yeah. Well, like I said back when we talked about it a little bit.
Yeah.
SOPA, I read through that thing numerous times, looking for every little loophole, everything in there, and I think it's got a firm set of checks and balances in there. A lot of the people against SOPA are using the Chicken Little approach: the sky is falling. You know, they can go. Major corporations can go through and immediately shut down a site or things like this.
Yeah.
And that, quite frankly, isn't true. There are two aspects to it: what the Attorney General of the United States can do and by himself, and then require a court order to do.
Uh-huh.
Everything in SOPA is against any site or any that does not have an American tie. You know, if there's a single owner which is tied to it, or a single host which is tied to it here in the States, SOPA does not apply. This is only exclusively foreign sites. And basically what the Attorney General by himself can do is send a letter asking, please don't do this.
Well, but why do we need a law in place to do that then? If it doesn't have much power, and if it's that limited, well,
it doesn't have much power by itself for the Attorney General by himself. Now, if the Attorney General, following correct legal procedures, goes and gets a court order, he has to apply for the court order, there has to be an injunction filed, there has to be a time for that injunction to be responded to, and if there is no response or no owner can be found after a good faith search, Then they can go through, and what is it that SOPA does is, A, it does allow them to take off the DNS entry so that they don't do that. It allows them to go through and get search providers to remove links to it, and it also cuts off the funding through American advertising and American financial institutions, all of which, I mean, it basically it follows laws that we have in place for other things right now. But it limits what the Attorney General and the United States government can do right now. Now, the one line in it that people have been really worried about was, let me look for it again. Section 104, and I'm trying to find the bill where I put the bill now. Section 104. Title 1, Section 104, here we go. Immunity for taking voluntary action against sites dedicated to theft of U.S. property, where it is a definition of what the private companies can do if they feel that there is something there. And basically, it's protection for them, saying that if they can take down a site or block a site if there is a reasonable belief that, one, the internet site is a foreign infringing site, or the internet site dedicated to the theft of U.S. property, no problem there, and the action is consistent with the entity's terms of service or other contractual rights. So there has to be that double thing there. And it's not just saying that somebody can go and do something willy-nilly. There has to be steps in place beforehand. And a lot of what SOPA is getting lambasted on are things that just aren't true.
All right. Alex?
Just make sure you're doing your research, guys, before you just go flailing around with your head cut off.
I'm just not seeing why, like, it. I know piracy has been, an issue in the past, but, I mean, it's been proven, and we've talked about it here on the show a bunch of times, how piracy, you know, it hasn't been nearly as much linked to actual profits as has been believed in the past. I mean, a lot of times the things that are pirated wind up doing better because of the piracy than worse. So I'm still not seeing why there needs to be a law in place around it.
To me, it's not so much. It isn't saying the law, because there are steps that they can take to do this stuff already.
Right.
What SOPA is doing is actually narrowing down the governmental powers over this.
Why is it? How is this narrowing down, though? How is this not creating more powers?
Well, right now, it's very nebulous what people can do, what the government can do in foreign sites. And again, I specify foreign sites because I've seen other sites where they're saying that SOPA is going to prevent us from making money or get us shut down, and that because they were American sites. Again, that's absolutely not true. But where it goes through and gives them a specific statement as to what can be done, it's no longer nebulous. If they want to do something, here's what the Attorney General can do, A, B, and C, and he must follow D, E, and F and get approval from the courts in H, Y, and J.
Gotcha.
And I'm, quite frankly, with the U.S. government, I like having them narrowed down and defined. We've seen from administrations past where they will use every gray area, if not outright break them, to go through and do what they want. And we've seen that from too many of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I can't argue that. All right, well... I guess we'll have to really continue this over at the website, since I want to make sure we get to everything else today.
The one thing I do want to add on is that I do have to ask all those people who are going out there and screaming about what SOPA will do, how many of them have actually read the bill or are just parroting what somebody else has said?
Yeah. All right. Fair enough. Well, we have links to actually go and read the entire bill over in the news post. So if you are interested in the topic, please feel free to do so. All right. We have a special guest as our own Eric is going to be joining the call. Hey, Eric. Hello?
Sorry. Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah. There's a bit of an echo.
How about now?
Yeah, much better.
Okay. Yeah. No, I just wanted to jump in here and talk about what Tom said. Everything Tom said was correct on SOPA.
Uh-huh.
The problem comes in is that SOPA assumes, and it is with that corporation clause, it assumes that the corporations would only submit a valid claim. And that's the problem, because we know corporations like Disney send out cease and desist letters to anyone whose first name happens to be Mickey. You know, the corporations use these laws to grind people down, especially small creative outlets. So there is that. That's the danger that people are worried about. It's
a good friend of mine and I discussed SOPA in length. And the thing that he agrees with SOPA, but he also believes that SOPA can be the start of the slippery slope to where there's going to be some of the stuff that people are talking about.
Uh-huh. Well, I mean, in that case, there's been a lot leading up to this. I mean, this is not the first bill of this type. This is more like the fifth or sixth, if not more. I mean, there's one that happens every couple of years. Sometimes they pass, sometimes they don't, based on the wording. I gotta say, I'm with Eric on this. I've seen so many takedown issues that, you know, get caught up in so much legislation that, I mean, I don't know.
But let's also go ahead and say, I mean, because a lot of the cease and desists that the major corporations send out are not going through the judicial system, but are rather are being sent out in a different manner. It's corporations suing small guy, as small guy is going through and saying, I don't have the money to do this, I will capitulate, or I will fight this. SOPA is specifically what the U.S. government can do. And before the Attorney General, I mean, granted, the Attorney General that we currently have is a tool. And, you know, will be the puppet of the corporations.
Tom, I mean, yet again, going back here, you're assuming that everyone's going to follow the rules. And because SOPA has such strong provisions, if you are found guilty, it's very easy for a company like Disney to go to a company, say, YouTube, and say, look, if you let one Disney cartoon onto your site, we're going to use this legislation. And we're going to go in and we're going to report you, and we're going to report you repeatedly every time it happens. And YouTube's just going to say, screw it, we don't have time for this. You know, it's one of those things that it can be used as a cudgel to attack sites and attack competitors.
Well, the YouTube analogy is a bad analogy because YouTube is an American company. This will only work on foreign companies.
Yeah. And, I mean, the thing is, SOPA is specifically aimed at one company. This bill is aimed at the Pirate Bay. That's why it exists. It is aimed at that one company, and the reason they're doing it is it expands. It does expand government ability to shut down DNS. They couldn't do that before. They haven't been able to do it. And they want to shut down the DNS and search engines and money to the Pirate Bay because that site is specifically dedicated to pirating copyright.
Absolutely.
That's why it exists. And this is a bill specifically aimed at that. And while shutting down that site is something that sadly needs to be done, having this bill gives... It is still around, and it's still a weapon that can be used against other sites. And so it's a little worrisome. I would like stronger language in it, because there are some vague parts. And that's, I think, the a lot of the people against SOPA, you know, have read the bill, and they look at it, and they say, the principle's okay, but this is too vague, and we know these companies are bastards, and they will find a way to abuse this.
Right. Max, to me, that's part of the reason why I'm for SOPA to wrap this up, is that, to me, it narrows down the definition of what the government can do against foreign-owned sites, but it doesn't handcuff them. And, I mean, there's always going to be some vague language in this, because there has to be some room to work. But there are the checks and balances which I feel are necessary for it. As long, and again, this is a big assumption, as long as they follow the laws and follow the rules, there won't be too much of a problem. There will always be problems no matter what language, but I'd much rather have that defined down than as vague. I mean, if they want vague, take a look at what's in the process now.
Yeah, but I mean, I would want more. I mean, if any time we're passing a law like this, I want no vague language. I want everything to be specifically defined. And anytime there's vagaries, it makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, but then we wind up with a 3,000-page bill like the healthcare bill that was passed without anybody reading it.
Yeah. Anyway, that was my two cents. I'll drop off here. I just wanted to put a contrary point in there.
All right.
I'll let you guys go on.
Thanks for joining us, Eric.
No problem.
All right. With that, we'll move on. Like I said, I hate to cut off the debate, but I just want to make sure we get to everything else going on this week. By all means, if you want to continue on the debate, go over to our website, where I'm sure we'll be hopefully railing about this in length. gee, where do you how do you possibly transition from something that serious into anything as lighthearted as here's how to make comics fun?
Funny sound effects help.
Well. Oh, there's got to be. Hold on. Wait for it. All right. With that, we'll move on.
Because we're adults.
And this too shall pass.
Anyway, you know, passing laws, passing gas, it's all the same, right? So,
but one smells better, and that's usually the
that's the gas.
Yes.
So, okay, Irregular webcomic has been running for a long time. They're most notably known as one of the few long-running and somewhat well-regarded photo-based comics out there, and they have posted recently a making webcomics article over on over at a regular webcomic, and interesting to see that discussion that's been had a lot about how to make a comic from the perspective of someone who does not draw at all. I sympathize, what can I say, but really interesting to see how he talks about kind of all the things around the drawing. You hear a lot about pens and markers and drawing and practicing and layout and that kind of thing. But he's focusing on all the other parts, how to do the photography, if that's your thing. Also how to write for it, how to plan it and other things around it. I know, and I'll ask you guys this in a minute, but the part that stuck out to me, that I thought was great was, some early scripts I've received had 300 or more words in them for one comic. If you look at IWC in the standard format for strips, I can only fit about 30 words per panel. Many of the strips don't go anywhere close to that limit. There are many strips that have over fewer than 30 words total in the entire comic. If you find writing succinct dialogue hard, try to set yourself a word limit. I find that once I've written something, I can usually go back and trim 30 to 50% of the text away without losing any meaning. You must do this for your comics. I gotta say, this is what turned my writing around. I hadn't read this before at the time, but what made my comic work for me and what turned it into something worth a damn was really, really, really limiting myself to the amount of words. And it makes you have to be so much more clever in everything that you say and succinct. And the old design adage, I think, is very true in this, in when it comes to writing, which is less is more sometimes.
Or as us old-timers call it, the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid.
Yeah. Or
and show, don't tell.
Yeah.
Or is, although if they can fit 30 words into a single panel, they're really must have some big panels.
Yeah, well,
if you, that I'm lucky if I can get maybe 15 to 16 words in, because then you're blocking art.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely, definitely, definitely am on the side of less words being much, 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 much better. I've for anyone that's read my comic can testify to the fact that, you know, it's definitely on the short side, word-wise. Definitely minimalism is the way I try and approach it as much as possible. But it's worked for me. And it's definitely the first comic I've done that people have responded to because of it. Yeah, I mean, even looking at his own stuff on a regular webcomic and actually focusing on how many words are going on, there's not much. I mean, it is even shorter than he was even saying in that post. Were there any other highlights for you guys in there?
To me, a lot of it was so directed towards the photographic comics that it really didn't have much of an impact on me.
Uh-huh.
To me, it kind of glossed over a lot of what goes into making a webcomic, whether it be drawn or photographic or whatever.
Uh-huh.
But they do have a couple of things on there which I go through and try to drive in whenever I talk on a panel.
Yeah.
And that is at the end, you know, don't expect to make any money. You know, don't start merchandising if you just put this thing out for the first time. Don't expect anyone, or at least say don't expect everyone. I say don't expect anyone to love your work.
I'd agree with you there.
And stick to your update schedule. You know, if you don't think, no matter what you do, put it in the Scotty factor. You know, multiply it by a factor of four. Give yourself some leeway time because like I always say, I use the saying of tattooed. You know, stuff happens and then you die. Expect bad things to happen because no matter how big a buffer you have, that buffer is going to disappear in no time flat.
Always does.
Yep.
Yeah, there was a week when I had a buffer. It died. Yeah, and I've been totally off of an update schedule. Well, while we're at it, Alex, any other webcomic tips that you've learned recently?
Have good ideas. That's been my problem lately.
If I had to give one tip lately, and this is, you know, for when you're finding yourself stuck, because I've been feeling stuck a lot, is sometimes it's good to dig yourself a hole. I made a rule for myself the other day. Draw one thing or pick one thing if you're going the more selective iconic route like I do, and then write a comic around it. You know, for those times you're feeling really stuck, sometimes giving yourself those constraints actually makes you more creative.
And that's for me. I mean, don't stop learning. I mean, I've been a professional writer for decades, and I still buy how-to books on that. The most recent one I bought was How to Do Comics by Peter David. And plus, I can't draw a lick. Mm-hmm. But I buy artist books, how-to books for artists, because when I talk with an artist, I want to be able to talk in their language. And on the flip side, it's important for an artist to know scripting and the terminologies that writers use, because you're going to be working with them in the future as well. And it's good to have a knowledge of the other half of what creates comic.
There you go. All right. Well, we need to start wrapping up here. Man, we're running out of time. So in brief, there's plenty more stories we could talk about today. So I'll just kind of zoom through a few of these just to mention them, and we'll link them over on our site. There's a nice article over on MTV Geek on using comics as educational tools, along with a lot of neat examples. Also, some interesting tidbit on how to see your tweets retweeted on Twitter. They removed the feature and how to get it back. Over at Cleefield on Comics, a really interesting article on creativity versus consumption. You know, a lot of times we as an audience become very much consumers and are very busy just kind of watching TV, reading books, and a really interesting take on how sometimes you need to in fact be creating, something that we webcomics people do all the time. There's new online comics from both Valve and also Buffy the Vampire Slayer's own Emma Caulfield. She played Enya for this. Anya, thank you. Enya.
Yeah, that was the top fan.
A little different. Yeah, a little different. Anyway, you can find out about all that and much more, and along with a pretty badass photo of Boba Fett riding a My Little Pony. All over, if you follow the links from our website over at newscast.webcomicbeacon.com. We hope you've enjoyed the show, and we will be sure to see you next week. Thanks again to my guests, Alex from alexsguide.net. Thanks again for being on the show, as always.
No problem whatsoever.
And the always opinionated Tom Reaver from 910cmx.com.
Make sure to stop on by. We've got plenty of comics that are great reading.
Awesome. I've been your host, Ross Scott. You can find my stuff at systemcomic.com. I hope you do. And with that, we will see you next week. Have a happy Thanksgiving for those of you here in the U.S. For those of you not in the U.S., have a wonderful weekend and week, and eat some turkey and think of us. So with that, as always, we'll end on just this note. Peanut butter and jelly, everyone. Have a good time. Bye.